C1R.
Number 14A.
We have read the paragraph from line 1 to 12, and so now we should ask ourselves now, what is the core, the pith of that paragraph? Again, we had various aspects in it. The first one was, well, how do drugs and animal magnetism heal? Then the answer, well, they don't heal, actually. They only exchange, or they only relieve suffering, and they exchange one disease for another disease, saying that actually we should classify disease first as error. This is also a terrific statement. So is that the main point, to classify disease as error, which nothing but truth or mind can heal? But she has already said that truth heals through mind in the preceding paragraph. So is that the point, really, that we should classify disease as error? Or is that what she said, that this mind must be divine, not human? No, that she has said before in the preceding paragraph, that it heals through mind with a capital M. She goes on and says, but mind, capital M, transcends all other powers and will ultimately supersede all other means of healing. Don't you feel you get the climax here? And she now says, oh yeah, you see, you believe that there is healing in with drugs, yes. You believe that there is, but you have seen that there is also healing in Christian Science through the divine mind. Now, which one do you prefer? Is the one better than the other one? Is the one more powerful than the other one? What will be the ultimate way of healing? And therefore, you have some sense of a climax, really, that she says, therefore, mind, the medicine of mind, transcends all other power or all other ways of healing. Then she goes on and brought in that in order to heal by science, you must not be ignorant of the moral and spiritual demands, nor disobey them. That's what we saw in the 13th chapter. Therefore, it's actually not dealing with the first question on line 1. It's no more dealing with that and answering that. You see, we also have to see what does answer the question. If the question is, do drugs heal and how do they heal, then the answer must be adequate. And so the moral and spiritual demands of science is a sideline. Moral ignorance of sin affects your demonstration, shows what hinders your demonstration, but that she had already shown also in the 13th chapter, so that finally you arrive at the point where you feel what she wants to bring out, that she says, all right, there is a belief in many healing activities and many healing powers and many healing methods, but there is only one thing really, and that's the ultimate, namely that mind, the divine mind as a healing power, transcends all other healing power. And so you arrive, so to say, here at the core of that paragraph. So that's why we have written down here in our epitome that mind transcends all other healing powers. But I quite agree that somebody who is perhaps interested otherwise or so may have felt that the last two sentences of the paragraph may be really the thing, that would be the climax, that you would say, well, you can't heal but with moral and spiritual qualifications, and may have put down that as an epitome, see? But then we will see that this would have made no sense. First of all, it does not make sense because the question at the beginning of the paragraph is something very different. It doesn't ask what qualification must you have in order to heal the sick. Yes? All right. So we go on to the next paragraph. A very interesting paragraph that comes now. After the author's sacred discovery, she affixed the name science to Christianity. Why does she start out that way? What may be the reason? Well, she was talking about Jesus and his healings and that he could heal and that he demonstrated that and he demonstrated it as the Christ through healing through mind. So that was order, that was Christianity. And so Mrs. Eddy comes and says, I go and make a step further. I attach now to Christianity the term science because she felt Christianity must be scientific and not religious. So we can hear that somehow she introduces here another tone that Christianity must be science. And so she affixed also the name error to corporeal sense. See, again, just as she classified disease as error, she also classifies corporeal sense as error, which is naturally a terrific thing, because who would in the whole world say that corporeal senses are error when every science and every natural science relies on the testimony of the physical senses, that only that is called and accepted as being proof of science if the five physical senses can testify it. If everything can be measured according to the five physical senses. So here again she really overturns the whole classical concept of science and says what the corporeal senses testify is error. Can go right into that classification. And she also affixed the name substance to mind. Well, that has always given a lot of query for the students who are studying the seven synonymous terms. They know that substance is spirit, that Mrs. Eddy says over and over and over, that spirit is substance, and that only the spiritual is substantial, and so attributes really the term substance to spirit, and now here suddenly it is mind. Now this has naturally its meaning, its reason, because we always see that it is the text, the context that defines if a synonymous term is used in conjunction, in blending with ideas of other synonymous terms. You know what I mean? I mean, for instance, the following, that we know that power is mind. Mind is the only power, mind is all power. But yet she speaks about the power of spirit and the power of life, or the power of love. Why can she do that? Now, from the synonym study, and especially when you go to syllabus classes, you take this subject up over days and exercise in it, which shows that if Mrs. Eddy is talking about the power of spirit, she doesn't mean that spirit is intrinsically power, but she only uses the rendering the power of spirit when it is in the context of matter or flesh, in the belief that matter has power, that the flesh has power. Only in that context she can use the power of spirit, because spirit offsets the belief of its opposite, flesh and matter. Therefore, if the subject is that matter has power, you cannot really heal it or correct it through the power of mind. You have to correct it through the power of spirit, because spirit takes care of matter and flesh. And the same thing is, say, if you feel that death is a terrific power, an irresistible power, there is no power that comes up against death. Death just comes irresistibly, and you have that feeling in the world that death is power, then naturally you correct that through the power of life. Yes, not the power of mind. Because death is corrected by life, and therefore the power of life is a combination, is already a calculation, taking the ideas of mind, like power, and combining it with life, but only exactly in order to offset the belief in death, not otherwise. Or you feel that error is a power, a very big power. In order to offset the power of error, you have to use the power of truth. Yes. See, because truth is that which offsets error. So we must be careful that we just can't take these statements literally, but must see that Mrs. Eddy uses the synonymous term not only in their own characteristics, like power of mind, but also in combination. It's the calculus that sets in. Calculating ideas of mind with ideas of spirit, that's the power of spirit. Calculating the ideas of mind with life, that's the power of life, and so on. And so here too, she suddenly speaks about substance, that which is a reality, and attached it to mind, because the whole answer to that question, is it important to understand this explanation in order to heal the sick, was building up really the sense that it's only through mind that you can heal, and not through beliefs that you can heal. And therefore mind is that on which you can rely, and not beliefs that you can rely on. Therefore it's mind that is substance to you. And so she attached the name substance to mind. She doesn't say substance is an intrinsic characteristic of mind. She just said, I attached it. I attributed it in this case. And so, because she could see, if I want to heal, I have to heal through mind that transcends all other powers, and that is the substance which I use. That's really that on which I rely. So after she has defined or shown these new terms, she goes on and says, science has called the world to battle over this issue and its demonstration. So again, she brings in the tone of science. First she said, I attach the name science to Christianity, I attach the name science to healing, to scientific healing. Now it is science has called the world to battle over this issue and this demonstration, which heals the sick, destroys error, and reveals the universal harmony. Can you see the new information? Up to now she said, what is healing? Truth is healing. Afterwards she said, how is truth healing? Truth is healing through mind. Afterwards she said, is that the only way of healing? Yes, mind transcends all other power. And now suddenly she begins to say, but science must be behind that Christianity healing. Science must do it. And so now she says, science heals the sick, destroys error, and reveals the universal harmony. She doesn't say here truth. She says science. What does she mean by that? do I have to understand these explanations in order to heal? Huh? Understanding truth. How do I understand truth? Understanding is science. So she brings in now that truth that heals through mind must be a science. So science does it. To those natural Christian scientists, here the whole tone begins to center here on science and on scientists. To those natural Christian scientists, the ancient verses, and also to Christ Jesus, God certainly revealed the spirit of Christian science, again science, yes? If not, the absolute letter. A wonderful statement here, showing something that she had to bring in, that last sentence is a terrific sentence, but it's not the core of it, of the paragraph. The core was always, you attribute to Christianity science. Science can heal. That can destroy error. And therefore, she had to answer somehow a suggestion that comes in. Because at that point, before that last sentence, everyone would have asked something, namely, if you say that science healed, how then did those ancient worthy heals who didn't know anything about the textbook you wrote? They didn't have a textbook. They didn't say it was science. They didn't say, I present the science. They didn't say that, and yet they healed. You see the objection that could come up at this moment. So she had to answer that point and said, well, you know, they were natural scientists. Those natural Christian scientists. What is a natural Christian scientist in her eyes? Namely, like those ancient verses, that they had the spirit of Christian science. If not, the absolute letter. If, you see, she leaves it open. She says, I really don't know. She left it open. She didn't say, and the absolute letter. Or nor did she say, but not the absolute letter. She left it open and said, actually, I just don't know if they really also knew the absolute letter or not, or if they only had the spirit of Christian science, and if they have only the spirit of Christian science, then they are a natural Christian scientist that just healed out of the spirit. And quite true, naturally somebody else can come in and say, well, then actually we only need really the spirit of Christian science and not the letter, so why bother about the whole study? All what you need is actually the spirit of it. She didn't answer this objection. She answers it later in the 23rd question, she answers that one, where she says, study thoroughly the letter, and then imbibe the spirit. So at this point, that was not really her great subject. Her great subject here was to show really that mind, which is the healing power, which is translates all other means of healing, must really be understood in its science. She demands now science. No matter if the ancient worthy had it or not, she knew that they had the spirit of it. So we could epitomize this paragraph by saying mind must be understood in its science, no more in its Christianity sense, in a religious sense. Now it is interesting that he would bring in here also these ancient verses that would heal through the spirit of Christian Science. She always somehow refers to that, even in the platform, which is that big matrix of 4x4 presentation. There, at the point of Christ as Christianity, she already indicated that, well, perhaps I better read it and just talk around it, that she said, Abraham, Jacob, Moses, and the prophets caught glorious glimpses of the Messiah or Christ, which baptized these seers in the divine nature, the essence of love. It baptized these seers in the nature of love. So they, here she takes it up and says those ancient verses were natural. Christian Scientists, they had the spirit of it. If she had the absolute letter, I don't know. You know, she was in the exactly same position as we are today with Mrs. Eddy, in regard to Mrs. Eddy. She was, did I put that straight? She was in a position in regard to the ancient verse and said, I actually don't know if they knew the exact letter. We today are asking that very same question about Mrs. Eddy. She certainly had the spirit of the science, but did she really understand the absolute letter? Did she? This is the question that comes up. Did she know about the system? What the system was? Or did she just say there is a system and it must be a system? But did she know that system? That's always the question that comes up. That's why Boston has such a strong position against us that she can, that they can say, well, Mrs. Eddy never says anywhere what that system is, never says that there are three categories of capitalized terms and that you must learn Christian Science through these categories of capitalized terms. See, all that Mrs. Eddy didn't state expressis verbis. You say expressis verbis, huh? Didn't spell it out like that. And so they say, she didn't want it to be studied that way. That's those Dolly groups that feel that way, but that's not in the textbook, and therefore it is an addition to the textbook. They want to know something more than the textbook. They want to know something more than Mrs. Eddy, and they never can really figure out that all we do is to investigate what Mrs. Eddy has written. So we don't know if Mrs. Eddy knew it or not. We only know one thing, already by certain, that we have seen when we were discussing the first question and the second question, that up to 1907 she couldn't know the exact letter. That we know now. Because at that point only she brought the definition of God in line with the way the individual chapters are built up in the word order. So before that there was a discrepancy between the way she had written the chapters and the way she defined God. But what happened after 1907, when she read it through consecutively in order to illustrate her idealism, we don't know. We don't know. We only know one thing that she said about 6 months before she left us, that she said that only now she begins to understand the textbook. But what she understood, that she didn't say. As far we don't know about it. So also we are in that position, like Mrs. Eddy, that we have to trust really the progressive steps that we see and trust our understanding and our investigation, and in this way we can really progress. So we come to the last paragraph. Because the the science of mind seems to bring into dishonor the ordinary scientific school, which wrestle with material observation alone. This science has met with opposition. So one begins to feel that this science is not accepted wholeheartedly, that it meets with opposition. But if any system honors God, it ought to receive aid, not opposition, from all thinking persons. So it's all about that this science honors God and therefore should be accepted, just as we said. We honor the textbook by seeing what the capitalized terms are, by seeing the category of the system, that divine metaphysics is reduced to a system, she says, and we can see the system. So also we can say we honor the textbook to the nth degree, as nobody else can honor it. So she goes on and says, and Christian Science does honor God as no other theory honors him, and it does this in the way of his appointing by doing many wonderful works through the divine name and nature. Yes, so again we have the many wonderful works that are done. One must fulfill one's mission without timidity or dissimulation. For to be well done, the work must be done unselfishly. So it's all about that she brings in now that the wonderful works must be done in his name, that the work must be done unselfishly, that the work must be done without timidity and dissimulation. I get the sense that really, everything should be grounded in science and deep-rooted in science. Christianity will never, oh yes, here she says it, will never be based on a divine principle. You can see now that it must be foundational and so found to be unerring until its absolute science is reached. And we get again a sense of a climax that says that the devotion and honoring of what we are studying is bringing us to the point where we more and more can really demonstrate it absolutely, that absolute science is reached. When this is accomplished, we get again a sense of a climax. When this is accomplished, neither pride, prejudice, bigotry, nor envy can wash away its foundation, for it is built upon the rock Christ. So we get the sense that she not only says, as in the preceding paragraph, that really mind must be understood through its science, but that she adds to it and really shows that it must, that this science of mind must be demonstrated absolutely, as an absolute science. Yeah. So we had here the epitome, the science of mind demonstrates science absolutely.